This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I'm Andrea Graham, and I am an evolutionary ecologist who is just fascinated by mammalian immune systems, in particular, how evolution has led to the powerful yet perilous immune systems that we are able to deploy against parasites in modern times, but that also make us susceptible to inflammatory and autoimmune diseases. I'm especially fascinated to think about how the power and peril of our immune systems emerge from the actions of the cells that make up the immune system, such as those depicted here. Now, the powerful yet perilous immune defenses that we deploy today, I would say they arose really, really a long time ago. And to some people, they arose a surprisingly long time ago. This depiction of the length of time, of evolutionary time leading up to the evolution of humans, is a favorite of mine because it's sort of intuitive. It maps it onto the sort of length of a human forearm, where if we think about the evolution of eukaryotes, our most ancient single-celled but organelle deploying ancestors, is way back here on the forearm, and then millions and millions of years passed before further evolution, evolutionary explosion, such as occurred during the Cambrian, the evolution of vertebrate animals, the time of the dinosaurs, etc. It's all mapped on here. And I like this because it's just showing humans are just here at the very most recent time period. We're sort of like, some people say we're kind of the dirt under the fingernail, really recently. But our immune defenses arose way back, way up the forearm of this timeline. To put it a little more specifically, this is just another way of looking at that deep time view of the evolution of multicellular eukaryotes, such as ourselves. This is a figure that I like a lot because it's mapping the evolution of organismal complexity from unicellular to multicellular organisms, for example, across these millions of years, these thousands of millions of years, in fact. And what this is depicting is that for many of these millions of years, all life on Earth was unicellular, and only much more recently did multicellular organisms evolve. And what I'm about to show you are the ways in which the traits of the cells that were evolving way back then are deployed in our immune systems today. For example, let's consider the power and the peril of phagocytes, such as neutrophils. Phagocyte, this is a word that means cells eating, cells that devour. And neutrophils are a prime example of phagocytes that we deploy in our immune systems. These are a couple of views down the light microscope of neutrophils. Here's a neutrophil here, seen in a field of red blood cells. So to give you a sense of what lurks in a drop of your blood, there'll be neutrophils in there alongside your red blood cells. This is a still from a very famous movie made in the 1950s of a neutrophil shown here crawling around again in a field of red blood cells in pursuit of a bacterium. So neutrophils are highly charismatic phagocytes, and their capacity to devour the bacteria, such as the neutrophil in this image was pursuing, is really fundamental to our defense, particularly against microbes. And just to map that back onto this timeline that I've showed you, over this long evolutionary history before multicellular organisms were around, cells acquired phagocytic ability, the ability to ingest microbes and other particles from the environment. And in fact, that phagocytosis is thought to be part of how archaea and single-celled eukaryotes evolved. More recently, Multicellular animals, starting with the sponges through to vertebrate animals such as ourselves, started using phagocytosis for defense. So an ancient phagocytic capacity using the cytoskeleton to surround and ultimately engulf things that are in the external environment has been now deployed in defense of multicellular animals. Specialized phagocytes defend us against infections. How does that work? So returning to the example of neutrophils, one way to think about it is that neutrophils patrol the body, sort of tumbling along in our blood vessels 24/7. And that's depicted here. This is a cartoon of a blood vessel with a neutrophil tumbling along in that blood flow. And here are some of those red blood cells that it co-occupies the blood with. They deploy to the site of an infection or injury to launch into phagocytosis and devour the microbes that they find there. So this is showing a neutrophil squeezing out into the site of an injury or infection in order to start devouring the microbes there. And you can also see there's this little, all these green dots representing chemoattractants. The neutrophils are perceiving cues that lead them to the site of infection or injury, and then they can start helping to defend us against the infection that might have established in that scrape we just got when we fell off our bikes. Neutrophils' ability to phagocytose pathogens is incredible indeed. They can contort to ingest really oddly shaped microbes, such as these rod-shaped anthrax bacteria shown here. This is a colorized scanning electron micrograph image with the neutrophil in yellow and the anthrax microbes in orange. So these are some really nasty bacteria. Anthrax is a pretty virulent infection. And here we have this heroic neutrophil phagocytosing even these long, awkward shaped anthrax bacteria. And you can see one here is sort of distending the membrane even of the neutrophil as it continues to ingest the anthrax bacteria. So here we cheer for the neutrophil who is helping to defend us against such a nasty infection. So that all sounds wonderful, and further wonderfulness is brought into play when we consider that neutrophils also produce chemical messages once they've deployed to the site of an infection, such as cytokines, that help recruit others to the site. So this image is showing migration paths of neutrophils, so-called swarming into a site of infection. The neutrophils in this image are stained green, and all of these multicolored paths show how they each progressed to join the first neutrophil on the scene and really gobble up microbes. You can imagine that multiple neutrophils might be required if you have quite a lot of microbes that need to be devoured at the site of infection. So all of this sounds great. So that's the power of this particular cell type, the neutrophil, to help defend us against infection. But if too many of them leave the blood vessels en masse, the person in whom this reaction is occurring is at risk of septic shock. What happens here is that the neutrophils that are all squeezing through those portals in the blood vessels, getting into a site of infection, in so doing, they can lead to a reduction in the blood volume in the blood vessels. If too many of them have moved out and they have caused some leakage of the capillaries of the circulatory system, the blood volume can drop so much that a person is placed at risk of septic shock, which can lead to coma and even death. Okay, so this swarming of neutrophils is very important in defending our bodies against infection, but it poses this very acute risk of very dangerous reactions, such as during septic shock. So an evolutionary ecologist like me thinks of this as sort of a balancing act, if you prefer, sort of cost-benefit trade-off between the power and the peril of cells of the immune system, such as neutrophils. And we would consider that we expect natural selection may have helped to maximize that power of cells to use phagocytosis to clear our microbes while minimizing the peril, minimizing the risk that a septic shock reaction will occur. So I want to talk a little bit more about that balancing act and how we think selection may have shaped the immune system's capacity. Before I go too much further, I want to remind you, though, that the immune system does not have an analog of the brain. It doesn't have a central organizing, sort of top-down control structure. So there's no analog of the brain that controls the system top-down across all of the lymph nodes and lymphatic vessels of the whole body. Instead, it's the distributed autonomous cells, the individual trillions of cells of the immune system that are spread all across the body. Those cells must self-organize to strike the balance. It's very sort of bottom-up controlled, the immune system. And cytokines are among the really important intercellular signaling molecules via which cells of the immune system can coordinate. They're considered to be the molecules that really make a system of our immune system. Now that we're multicellular, complex, anatomically complex, large organisms, the cytokines help our cells to coordinate and defend the entire space. So how do we think about how natural selection might have worked on the capacity of cytokines to strike an optimal protection pathology balance? So first of all, a lot of people talk about this balance between protecting a host against infection versus minimizing the risk of immune pathologies as some sort of Goldilocks balancing act. Ron Germain, in fact, called this the Goldilocks optimum, some sort of intermediate optimum. And if we consider this in a semi-quantitative form, we can plot out predictions such as shown here. So for example, if we have in panel A, individual fitness, like organismal fitness, evolutionary fitness on the y-axis and cytokine response magnitude on the x-axis, ranging from cold on the left through to hot, so low magnitude on the left and very high magnitude cytokine responses on the right, we expect that as we move from left to right, the risk of infection, the risk that infectious disease poses to host fitness declines because those cytokines are activating neutrophil swarms and other aspects of the immune response to control infection. But if we go too far, the risk of immunopathology really starts to rise. You know, at this hot end of the cytokine response magnitude spectrum, this is where septic shock would lie. So the optimal cytokine response magnitude would minimize both of those dangers, right? And in this case, it falls right here in the middle. Sort of the Goldilocks optimum lies there. Goldilocks, you know, she was very picky, but it's very smart to seek an intermediate optimum when there are dangers posed by both of the extremes, extreme risk of infection versus immunopathology. And you could arguably say it's as true for cytokine responses as for porridge temperature, bed softness, and the other things Goldilocks was worried about. Now, if we look at panel B, there are contexts in which folks argue that it's not all as symmetrical as panel A suggests. Rather, in panel B, we see that the optimum is shifted to the hotter side. This is representing a hotter optimum. This represents a context where infectious diseases perhaps pose a greater risk, and also the risk of immunopathology. It's still high, but it rises quite steeply only at the most extreme end of the cytokine response magnitude spectrum. And so in this case, you would draw the optimum up here, which is hotter than in panel A. But in this case, a host teeters on the edge of catastrophic overshooting, such as seen in septic shock. So these are important principles to bear in mind when thinking about how natural selection could have led to the power and peril of immune systems that we observe today. But there's a little bit more that I want to layer on. And that is that there's also some uncertainty and some imprecision in the capacity of our cells to self-organize to meet the challenges at hand. What I mean in panel C is that there's uncertainty in what the optimal response magnitude actually is, partly because of varied risks of infectious disease and immunopathology across space and time. So if the risks posed by a given environment are uncertain, then it can be uncertain in how exactly the response needs to be tailored to optimize the host's fitness, to maximize host fitness and optimize the immune defense in that environment. Equally problematic is that the self-organized cells of our immune system have a lot of imprecision in their capacity to achieve the optimum. I told you about the neutrophils swarming into the site of infection and recruiting others, and they keep swarming and they keep recruiting others. And as you might imagine, that is actually prone to overshooting. And so imprecision in the realized response also contributes to the variation in the outcomes for hosts that we observe. Variation in the microbial burden that might make them sick, as well as variation in the immunopathology, the autoimmune and inflammatory diseases that they experience. So ultimately, I think through the lens of evolutionary ecology, especially in light of our self-organizing immune systems, if we want to answer the question of why do hosts such as humans vary so much in their susceptibility to infectious and inflammatory diseases, if we want to explain why some kids have inflammatory disease, why millions of people per year die of the kind of septic shock that those neutrophils are capable of inducing in us, if we just want to understand why in a given crowd of humans, why some of them are much more susceptible to infection than others, we need look no farther than the cells of our immune system and the double-edged swords that they bring, the simultaneous power and peril that they bring to responses against infectious agents. That's as true for the macrophages and plasma cells depicted in these micrographs, as for the neutrophils on which I have focused for most of this talk. And in sum, what I would say is that evolutionary legacies of our multicellularity, having arisen from unicellular organismal ancestors who acquired phagocytic capacity, among other skills, and a decentralized immune system where there's no top-down control and the collective needs to respond to the challenge at hand, that those together make it tough to perfect responses. And that in itself can help to explain the heterogeneity among individuals in the balancing acts that they strike when infected. This raises lots of interesting questions, such as how risks of immunopathology may be offset by gains in the speed, agility, or robustness of the system. There are lots of interesting questions to explore. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.